off with Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Okay, Rudolph, full power!
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, co-pilot. That's me, along with Captain Dennis and RV Tom, rounding out the crew on this holiday edition. When you're out there flying around next few days, keep an eye out for any red lights. They might be airplanes. It might be the guy. Might be Rudolph. Might be the big guy. You're gonna have to avoid them. You know, keep your. What is the distance you must maintain from another flying vehicle, like a red sleigh with a big fat guy in it?
I'm not sure. I mean, the right-of-way rules, is he considered powered aircraft? Is he lighter than air?
Good point. At the bare minimum.
Is the ADS-B equipped? I mean, at this point, you know.
I think so.
Do NORAD, you see Santa on your fish finder?
Well, NORAD tracks him, so surely must have ADS in and out, I would think. You know, the big guy's probably got up with the latest tech. Those elves they're pretty much in the know from what I've heard. Anywho, let's
so you're on the naughty list again, huh?
Yeah, well, it's just what we do here at Just Plane Radio. We also cover other interesting little tidbits. There has been an effort, I guess. The FAA has said they want to phase out DERs, which are, Dennis?
Designated engineering representatives.
Okay. And the reason they're down on these folks is what? Why?
Well, because it involves oversight. The FAA has to, you know, provide some level of oversight for these engineers, because these engineers are given the authority to actually make decisions and grant authorization for installs or engineering approvals for components on behalf of the FAA.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it takes a lot to vet these guys. They're usually very experienced, but somebody has to oversee them. It takes administrative paperwork and time. And so their logic is, well, if we free them up, then we have more time to monitor the airlines and the other aircraft manufacturers, things like that.
Yeah.
The downside to that is for small companies, innovative companies that are, you know, looking to bring new products to the market, how are they going to be able to get those approved going through the normal FAA channels if they can't hire their own engineering representatives on a much smaller scale?
Mm, okay.
You know, yeah. You think about it, somebody's going to come up with some new innovative widget that's maybe going to replace a component in your airplane. It's got to get certified. If it's going to replace something on a certified airplane, it's got to get an approval.
Yeah.
And so you have to test it. You have to come up with a curriculum for what's the test plan needed to basically prove that this meets all of the requirements of the component you're trying to replace, or that it's safe to install on a new airplane, things like that. And that's what these engineering representatives do. Or even on a more functional level, if you have a major structural failure in your airplane, maybe a spar breaks or something like that, you can engage an engineer, a DER, to come up with a alternate means to repair that and, you know, get that airplane back into service, where otherwise you might have had to scrap it. So there's all sorts of use cases where a DER might need to be engaged in order to keep us flying.
Yeah. Well, they're a little bit more accessible.
More accessible.
Yeah. And by the way, do we call them DERs or can we call them DER? Are you a DER?
I wouldn't call them a DER. They might think that derogatory.
Well, okay. So DER. Have you ever been tempted to be one of those? Do you have any qualifications to do that kind of thing?
No way.
Okay.
There's a reason I got a biology degree in math and sciences.
That's it. But yeah. But they think this would be a cost-cutting advantage if they eliminated that level?
Sure. It takes some workload off of their inspectors, and maybe they don't need to have as many inspectors, or they can devote more time towards some of the bigger players in the market. You know, think the Textrons, the Boeings, you know, things like that.
Right. But I don't know, there's been some scuttlebutt online that the industry, a lot of pilots, not a big fan of that for those reasons you kind of point out, I guess. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I think it would very much inhibit advancements in general aviation.
Yeah.
Could actually mean the end of it, because how are you going to get the next autopilot, you know, a low-cost autopilot certified, or maybe some electronic gauge replacement? You know, companies like UAvionics have spent years developing things like the AV30 or Garmin's G5. I mean, Garmin probably has the attention of the FAA with just the sheer volume of products they're doing. But these smaller manufacturers, they probably wouldn't even get on the list. And you're going to spend years trying to develop a product only to get it stymied by not being able to get any sort of approval.
Right. So you're killing innovation if you get rid of the DERs or DERs. There you go. Okay. So that's the thing. We'll have to watch and see how that progresses in the new year. Interesting little story. You know, being that we're in the holidays, you might be watching a lot of holiday movies or just got some downtime and things like that. You might want to watch Top Gun, Maverick, that kind of stuff, you know, if you're an aviation enthusiast. But I came across this interesting story that Tom Cruise, it happened a few years ago, but just evidently a story broke the last week or two about he wanted to do some filming in the space station. I don't know if it was for, I think it was for a special movie project that didn't come to fruition, at least not yet. But he bailed on the idea, and I was like, could you even do that? And the reason I guess he bailed is, like, according to the story, is like he didn't want to go to the government, the U.S. government, and say, hey, can I get special permission? Can I get a permission slip to go hang out on the space station and film a movie? And he didn't want to go there or, you know, ask the administration for the approval or something. But I'm like, is that even, you know, a thing? And then, sure enough, we looked it up, and there...
Oh, yeah, it's definitely been a thing. Dennis Tito was the first civilian to actually pay for a private ride to the International Space Station, and that was back in 2001.
Yeah, but we didn't supply the ride, did we? That was...
No, he paid for that, and it was, at the time, we didn't have the shuttle anymore, so the only way up there was through, you know, through the Russians using the Soyuz shuttle, or using the Soyuz rocket. But he still had to pay however many millions of dollars to, you know, basically get that ride up there.
Okay.
But now SpaceX is able to do it through some of these private civilian only programs like Axiom Space, basically hires SpaceX and a Dragon and can take an all civilian crew. And they just, their first all civilian crew to the space station went up there in 2022. So four civilians flew to the International Space Station on their own rocket.
Right. Well, and that's what Bezos was planning to do with his
spaceship. Blue Origin, yep.
Yeah, and as well as the other guy, the Virgin Atlantic one, right? And isn't that what they ultimately hope to do? Is, right, so far, they've only done, you know, like going out in the stratosphere.
Suborbital hops.
Yeah, but ultimately, is that where they're going to go if they go to space? They'll pop over to the space station for a weekend, for a overnight stay.
Well, I think with Blue Origin, yeah, that's what their ship is capable of. It. I don't think that Virgin Galactic, their ship was really designed for suborbital flight. It wasn't really designed to go up there and stay up for, you know, laps around the planet.
Right.
So,
but the Blue Origin thing was like what, $250,000 to get on their list or something when they wasn't cheap. But it wasn't something like that. I think it was to reserve a spot to be one of the first, you know.
Yeah, that might have been just to reserve customers. Your spot. I bet it's going to be a lot more than $250,000 to take a ride.
Yeah. Well, at least for the initial rides. But I think just to reserve your spot and to be one of the first people when they start doing it. But I didn't even think about that being a stopover. You know, it's like, oh, we're going to fly up there and you'll spend a week in the space station. Drinking Tang and powdered, you know, donuts or something, or whatever they put in those little dry bags of food, a gooey mess.
Astronaut ice cream, of course.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, and so crappy food, drink, but you're in space. We're going to charge you accordingly. But I don't know, while you're up there.
Imagine. The view is amazing.
And the view would probably be pretty sweet and make for a pretty nice backdrop for a movie. I don't know. Maybe Tom's going to revisit this adventure in 2026. So we'll monitor it accordingly. On that note, we're going to wrap up this holiday edition of The Big Show. Till next time, remember, there's no better high
than learning
to fly. To fly.
Just Plane Radio is brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
It's the only way to be sure.
Just Plane Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
But just plain wrong.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past shows worldwide over the internet at JustPlaneRadio.com.
I'm going to lead my people up to the radio tower.
So tell a friend and take off every week with Just Plane Radio.
And I'm going to make a call.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.